I'm Stephen, he's Chris, and this is Mobile Arcade Club, a show where we take a look at games from Apple Arcade each episode and talk about what works, what doesn't, and hopefully let you know if it's something you might want to try. On this episode, I swing through the trees as a gibbon in Gibbon Beyond the Trees, and Chris slides down the mountains of Alto's Adventure Remastered.
Hello and welcome to episode 48 of the Mobile Arcade Club. On this episode, Stephen and I are going to be checking out Gibbon Beyond the Trees and Alto's Adventure Remastered. So a bit of a classic there, but we'll start things off with Gibbon Beyond the Trees, which started as an Apple Arcade game and featured very recently as part of Nintendo's Indie World Showcase. So it's now on Nintendo Switch as well, I believe, but of course, we played it, or rather, you played it, Stephen, on Apple Arcade. Walk us through.
Yeah, I sure did. So Gibbon Beyond the Trees, it comes to us from the developer Broken Rules out of Vienna in Austria. And it's a game where you play as one member of a family of gibbons who have to swing through the trees to get essentially from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen. It opens up with a sort of a bit of an environmental statement so that you know that this game has sort of an idea to communicate to you. And it's that it's talking about how the habitat of the gibbon is being impacted by, you know, humans coming into their space, deforestation, climate change, things like that. And so that can sometimes, it probably gives you a bit of a hint that the story's not going to be all roses, unfortunately, but I'll get into that a little bit later. I feel like this is going to have a little bit of crossover with the second game that we talk about on this episode, but the game control, it's all about building up and maintaining momentum. So you control it in a fairly simple, straightforward way. It's controlled by just having your two thumbs on one side of the screen or the other. And so you hold the right side of the screen to sort of move along, swing in the trees. You let go just before the end of a branch to get a little bit of a leap so you can get some more airtime and hopefully catch another branch on your way down. And you can hold your thumbs on both sides of the screen and you'll run along the ground or a branch, especially if you've sort of haven't had enough distance to make it to the next branch. You might fall down to the ground and have to run along and climb your way back up the tree. But really, there does have some very minor additional things that get added to the game sort of midway through, like a flick with your right thumb that lets you do a flip in the air, which gives you a speed boost if and when you land it. But aside from that, it is really straightforward with how it controls. There's not a whole lot of complication to it. It's really just about getting and maintaining that momentum as its core gameplay mechanic, and it does that really well. It's really fun to, you know, once you build up that speed and if you can maintain it, it feels really, really great to keep up that speed and just to play the game in that way, in a way that reminds me of a game that we often refer to on this show, Tiny Wings, a little bit of the Sonic games. It's just all these games that are about going fast, essentially, and it is fun to do that. And the thing that was my absolute favorite part of this game, I think, is it uses that game mechanic to really work in concert with the story to communicate in a way that it's enhanced by the fact that it is a game that you're playing rather than sort of watching a movie, a documentary or something like that. So without going into too much detail, the story does go along and there'll be some unfortunate things that happen. And one of those is that you will find yourself in a more human populated area. So along with humans often comes buildings, comes fewer trees around. And the fact that there are fewer trees around, they're less dense, it makes that movement, makes sort of building up that momentum and keeping it much more challenging. And it kind of communicates the way that this deforestation, the removal of the natural habitat, directly impacts the one thing that you want to do as a gibbon, which is swing through the trees. And I find that just an incredibly powerful way of communicating through gameplay. Just, you know, it's a very simplified thing. I'm sure that there's more worries for gibbons than how fun it is to swing through trees, of course. But I think the way that it directly impacts the the way that you play the game in a way that reinforces the message that the game is trying to put across. I just find that immensely powerful. And it's something that when a game does that, it goes straight to the top of my must playlist.
Yeah, I really, really love that in games that find a way to marry narrative and gameplay conventions together. And as you say, to present it in such a way that you can't with another form of medium. So to be able to tangibly say, hey, this is an environmental issue affecting this species, and it actually impacts your gameplay, your ability to swing through trees as freely and as speedily, that sounds really, really clever. And I hearing that alone makes me want to check it out myself and really experience it firsthand. One thing I'm really curious about is how is the game structured? So does it present in like a series of discrete levels, or is it a bit of an open, endless runner? Well, it wouldn't be a runner, it would be an endless swinger. Not swinger in that sense, but anyways, that's...
we'll get there.
but yeah, how does it present structure-wise?
It kind of is a bit of an endless swinging in the trees game.
Good save.
It does have sort of discrete levels in that events will happen at certain intervals, I guess, and that will sort of be your transition into a new level, so to speak. And there'll be checkpoints throughout the level, so you can sort of close the app, run off, do something if you need to, come back to it, and you'll mostly be, you know, roughly where you left it off, which is nice. But yeah, it is sort of level structured, but if you sit down and play through it all in one go, I sort of had two sessions to get through it personally, it doesn't feel like a bunch of segmented pieces. It can just sort of fairly naturally flow through to from one end to the other. And I found it was quite comfortable to play through. I reckon you could get through it in a sitting. It was about an hour to an hour and a half long, depending on, you know, how successful you are in swinging through the trees. And so I found it a really good length for a session or two. You can get through it in a nice relaxing afternoon, and it's a lovely way to spend such an afternoon, I think.
As someone terribly sick of games that overstay their welcome by many, many hours, that's music to my ears. I'm even more keen to check the game out now because of how concise it is. And especially, I think that's really great. Obviously, on Apple Arcade, we read reports over the last 12 months about how there was a little bit of a shift in the content strategy of trying to go for games that really focus on player retention and bringing players back. So I'm really heartened to see and hear that they're still enabling games with concise standalone experiences on the platform as well. So that's really, really promising to me. And again, I'm really, really keen to check this game out because I know I will actually be able to see it through to the end with all the other commitments I've got going on. So yes, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there's definitely room for long-term engagement games, but I find myself missing a lot in the current gaming landscape, or not so much missing, but gravitating towards games that have an end of sorts. So, you know, when a game goes on forever, I never feel finished with it, and can sometimes feel a bit like an obligation more than a thing I enjoy, which puts me off sometimes. But yeah, this one, I think it might be a concession to the whole player retention sort of idea. Once you do finish the main storyline, there is a second part that you unlock that it sort of continues the story, but I get the impression that it's not really an extra story as much as it is just a bonus mode that you play as a character who is there at the end of the game, let's say. And yeah, I think it definitely, as you say, it doesn't outstay its welcome, and the storytelling is very concise as a result. You never feel like you're going too long before some sort of event or transition is happening, and it really keeps it going at a good clip. So the story remains engaging and interesting. And I think often when a game has such a single mechanic at its core, it can sometimes be easy to outstay a game's welcome in that case. And I think the length of this game was just about right because it gave you time to really perfect and get good at how this game wants you to play it. And I found it's not a game that's going to force you to, you know, to go through some grueling dungeon or, you know, horrible trial or anything like that. But it does have room for some degree of mastery as you go through the game, and it gives you enough space to learn and get better at what you're doing. But yeah, it ends at a point where I felt I was enjoying the game still. I had fairly well worked out how to play it, and it finished a little after that. So I think both in story as well as how the gameplay itself progresses and gets more interesting, it was pretty well the perfect length. If there's one thing that I have negative to say about it, this first part's not negative. It looks gorgeous. It has a really nice sort of flat shaded art style where everything is sort of, you've got your bright pink gibbon on a dark bluey background a lot of the time, so it really stands out and looks gorgeous. But I think it's definitely, it might be my eyes. I do wear glasses, so that might be part of it. But I think on my iPhone, I found it a little bit difficult to see the details of my gibbon and the trees that I am wanting to fling myself between. And so I kind of sat down for a second after playing it on the iPhone and then decided to download it onto the iPad. The save all synced up, and that was perfect. And once I'd picked it up on the iPad, it was a little bit more annoying to hold onto than a phone, but I just found it so much easier to see things, to appreciate the art style and just see what I'm doing, I guess. So that's the only real negative thing I have, is that it's more suited to a bigger screen just so you can more clearly see what you're doing. That might just be a me thing. I definitely would say, even if you only have an iPhone that can play this, definitely give it a try, because it's not by any means unplayable. I think it's just more preferable to play it on a bigger screen for me with my eyes and my experience specifically.
That's a very interesting observation. I wonder if it's something we'll hear in several minutes' time with the next game. But before we do that, did you have any closing remarks or anything else you want to add?
Not in particular. I think it's something I really enjoyed. As I said, it's a concise game. It's a great way to spend an afternoon, and it's just the right kind of game that I needed at the time that I was playing it. It was after I'd finished Elden Ring, I'd spent about 130 hours going through every nook and cranny of that massive, grueling game. And just to have something that is straightforward, it's enjoyable, it has, you know, has the nice, not nice, but has an impactful message that is communicated through both gameplay, story, in concert, I think it's a lovely way to spend an afternoon. And I think whether it clicks with you in the same way as it does me, an hour and a half is not a long time to spend on a game. So you could probably, you know, quickly play through it. And if it clicks, awesome. If it doesn't, you've lost an hour. Nothing really to worry about.
Well, that is Gibbon Beyond the Trees, something that I'm very, very keen to check out after your glowing words there, Stephen. So we'll move on to the other game, the game that I've been checking out the last few weeks, Alto's Adventure Remastered, The Spirit of the Mountain, by Team Alto, based out of Toronto. Now, this is a sort of revisiting of a game that's a bit of a classic. I think the original won an Apple Design Award, or if not, it was nominated for one. Feel free to comment in any of the socials to remind us.
Yeah, I'm 99% sure it did win one, but yes, curious to hear confirmation.
Yeah, so this one is an App Store classic that we already know has a fantastic reputation. But one of the great things about this coming back to Apple Arcade, not only being remastered and having a few little new features added along the way, is it allows for people like myself who missed the game the first time around, despite its glowing reputation, to actually play this and experience it for the first time. So for those who don't know, Alto's Adventure, it's an endless snowboarding odyssey where pretty well the aim is to try and get as far as you can down these snowy slopes. And along the way, round up some runaway llamas, because of course, why not? Jump over obstacles, grind on ropes between buildings, do various snowboard tricks, all without crashing, of course. And I found it is the quintessential mobile game because it's great for playing on a mobile device from a number of perspectives, because the way that it's structured is great for pick up and put down play. It's something that you can pick up and play for short bursts, put it down, come back to it later on. And it's also a game that's very, very intuitive to play and control on a mobile device. It's an intuitive one-touch control system where your only input is to tap to jump and to hold, tap and hold to jump and try and do a backflip. And the backflips I'll get to in a little bit, but doing the tricks was a little bit trickier than I thought it might have been, having come from some of the skateboarding games like Ollie Ollie, those sort of games where you can do tricks pretty well without batting an eyelid. But here you've got to be very considered about when you choose to do a backflip. That is because Alto's Adventure is very much momentum and physics-based. So similar to Gibbon, similar to the oft-used example of Tiny Wings and the mini games inspired by said game. So essentially you've got to try to build up momentum going down this pretty well this endless slope. So you need to understand, okay, here's where I've got enough speed, here's where I've built up enough momentum going down a particularly steep section of this slope so I can time my jump to, you know, clear a gap, clear a chasm, to clear another obstacle, because there are some interesting and various obstacles that you encounter along the way, but obviously very much speed and momentum based. So you've got to make sure you've got the speed to pull off these maneuvers, and that also extends to doing backflips, because the character that you play as in Alto's Adventure, they're not the fastest backflipper. So you've got to make sure you've got enough space to do so, and you've got enough speed to cover enough distance in the air to be able to actually land the trick. Otherwise, you will eat snow, quite literally, as I did multiple times early on.
Yeah, it's super interesting because I think of snowboarding generally as a bit of an extreme sport, but this game really makes it a very chill experience. I'm coming from the perspective of having played the original Alto's Adventure, so if anything I say is wrong for the remaster, let me know. But it was definitely the pace of the backflip. You have to be very, very considered about when you choose to do one, because once you've committed, you can't uncommit, and if you don't land it, that's your run done. But I think, yeah, it really goes for that relaxed, sort of laid-back vibe. There's no big music going on, no explosions when you land a trick. It's just like, oh, cool, you get some points. That was nice. You better keep going down the slope. Is this very nice sort of place. It's a chill vibe, and that's what I like.
Yeah, I would say a combination of chill and the right amount of stress, because when you are building up speed, you've still got to look out for obstacles. You've still got to look out for gaps and chasms and crevices along the way. So there are hazards for you to navigate, which do keep you on your toes quite frequently. But yeah, I do agree. It is certainly one of the more relaxed snowboarding games I've come across, that's for sure. Because although you're trying to get as far as you can in a single run, because if you crash, that's the end of your run and you can choose to start again or close the app in frustration, which I may have done once or twice, but that was user-driven, not game-driven. Let me be clear about that. You accumulate points based on a combination of things, so it's combined with how far you go, so it tracks your distance that you go within a run down the slope, and also tricks and various things you collect along the way. It all adds up to accumulate points, so there's a little bit of a high score system as well in a leaderboard system for those who are motivated by chasing high scores or wanting to beat other people in an asynchronous sort of platform. But that's not necessarily the reason that I play games. It's not a motivating factor that keeps me coming back to a game. So I'll return to that in a sec. But one thing I will add is that during runs, you also collect these little coin-like currencies, which go towards purchasing a variety of items when you're back at sort of the peak of this slope, this mountain that you're on, which includes items such as one-off items, I'll add, such as helmets and pickaxes, which can be used as a one-time protection against crashing into something or falling down a chasm. So it will sort of rescue you and use that item as a consumable to keep your run going, which is handy if you've got a particularly good run going, make a single mistake and think, oh, what could have been if I had just navigated that particular thing in my way. But that's...
I'm actually kind of curious about that. I don't know if it was in the original, but I don't remember. What do you know, or when do you have to decide to use it? Do you have to sort of commit to it up ahead and hope that this run is the one where you're going to go really well, or is it one that you can use, oh no, I've crashed and I've been doing really well, I'll use my helmet to get back up?
It's funny you say that, because being the stubborn person I am and someone who refuses to use assists unless absolutely necessary, I never actually bought or used any of those items. So
you're the kind of person who gets to the final boss in an RPG and has every potion that they've picked up the entire game, I'm sure.
It annoys my partner to absolute no end. Just as a quick aside, I recall one time playing one of the early Yakuza games, which for those who aren't familiar with the franchise, is sort of a fighting slash RPG series, very heavy on story. And I went a very long section of the game without upgrading any of my traits, and I was bashing my head against a brick wall with one of the final bosses, and my partner suggests, how about you know, see if you've got some upgrades. And so I'm like, oh no, I'm going okay, I can do this myself. But to her encouragement, I opened up the upgrade screen, and it turned out I had like 100 points to invest in various things. And she was very disappointed in me for neglecting one of the core systems of the game and insisting on just brute forcing this experience. So that just gives you a little bit of an insight as to how I play games.
Sounds like you'd be a perfect candidate for a soul level one run of Dark Souls. Let me know when you've got on that.
Yeah, I might not attempt that one, but yeah. So Alto's Adventure isn't quite as hardcore as some of these other games, but with some of these assists that are there, I think, cool, that's there. Now for me to never use them. But there are also other things that you can spend currency on. So there are some other things which are more permanent upgrades. So you can spend these little coins on upgrades to how long various power-ups that you can collect mid-run, how long they last. And that includes items such as magnets, which attract coins from a greater distance, meaning you don't have to run directly into them to collect them. And there's also like a wing or a hover item that helps you hover above obstacles for a short period of time. So by spending money and upgrading those, it increases the duration that those things actually last. So those are some things that I actually did invest in. So I wasn't entirely stubborn in my refusal to spend money. But
you're
yes.
Not upgrade averse. You are just, you prefer permanency is what I'm getting.
That's very true. It's why I tend to gravitate towards roguelites. That is roguelite with a T, as opposed to roguelikes with a K. But that's separate to this game entirely. But yeah, one of the gameplay elements and systems that I did enjoy, to return to what I was saying about chasing high scores and leaderboard positions, that's something that I don't get a lot of satisfaction out, or something that I spend a lot of time chasing. So one thing I did appreciate with Alto's Adventure is that, and I think this is very reminiscent of back in the day when I played Jetpack Joyride, you know, another sort of endless type mobile game. Where
I was thinking the same thing as we were talking about this.
Where between runs or during runs, rather, you've got various goals that you can work towards. So in Alto's Adventure, it manifests in goals such as recruiting or rescuing a specific amount of llamas, whether it be accumulatively or on a single run, or beating a distance target. So those little mini goals that you work towards then, you know, grant you a higher level rank, that sort of thing, which is a way of recognizing, you know, how many of these goals that you've actually completed. But I really enjoy sort of having sub-objectives or these little extra motivators or things that give you a way of engaging with a game in slightly different ways than if you were just left to your own volition. So I thought that was a neat little way of, you know, shifting my focus. And with subsequent runs, I was thinking, okay, I'm focusing more on llamas this run, or no, I'm focusing more on trying to do a certain amount of backflips this run. So I would approach the run a little bit differently each time, which I found an effective way to keep things pretty fresh, which I appreciated.
Now, I think it's interesting to bring that up in the context of us talking about the Gibbon before, because they're both games that rely on a fairly central single mechanic to get you through the game. And I guess in the way that we were saying, Gibbon has a concise runtime so that it doesn't outstay its welcome. I feel like Alto's Odyssey, Jetpack Joyride, Tiny Wings, all the Hall of Fame games that we're mentioning this episode, they all do that similar thing where they're more, the idea of them is to be playing these over a long period of time, that sort of whole player retention idea, and making a single mechanic interesting over time can be difficult. And having these little mini challenges, I've found each of those three games I've mentioned, I've played absolutely to death. I think I played through so much Jetpack Joyride. I bought it on PC. I have it on my phone. I had it on anything that could run a video game at a certain point in my life. And yeah, it's just a very effective way of getting a lot more runtime out of a single mechanic that might otherwise not quite have the same staying power. So yeah, I really, really love that way of doing things.
And a bit of a callback to what you were mentioning with Gibbon earlier, from a visual standpoint, specifically with Alto's Adventure, I love the visuals. It's got a beautiful art direction, and the background features these just beautiful vistas with changing times of day, like sunset, dusk, during the day, evening, which affect the lighting and colours just to create these beautiful vistas. And it's such a pretty game to look at. And the audio is fantastic as well in creating just some lovely soundscapes. Just before recording, I booted up the game just to give myself a bit of a refresher, and rain started falling, and I love the sound of rain and white noise and that sort of thing. So they've done a lovely job of creating these soundscapes as well, just, you know, making this really nice cohesive package of a game. But the interesting thing with the visuals, and this is almost a carbon copy of what you said with Gibbon, is because of the art direction, I'm not an artist, so I sort of don't quite have the vocabulary to fully explain this, but because it's sort of a little bit, I'm not sure, two-toned, or it's not something where there's a lot of high contrast in terms
of... lot of pastels on pastels from memory.
Yeah. There's not a high amount of contrast between some of the visual elements, especially in the foreground with your snowboarder and some of the obstacles that come up and that sort of thing. So I found, and I played this entirely on an iPhone 13, I found it a little bit difficult to see obstacles coming up in advance, because some of them I found blended in a bit, and it also depended on what sort of lighting environment I was playing it in as well. So if I was playing it in an environment where there was a little bit of sun coming through the window or a little bit of glare on the screen, I found it really, really difficult. That combined with sort of the smaller, comparatively smaller screen of a mobile phone as opposed to, you know, a TV screen or an iPad or whatever, I did get tripped up a few times. So if you are playing this on a phone and you're playing it out and about, as much as possible without draining the battery excessively and, you know, impacting your ability to use your phone at other times of the day, certainly crank the brightness up as much as you're comfortable with, because it does help a little bit, provide a bit more contrast between various visual elements of the game. Because I did find the contrast a little bit tricky to differentiate at times.
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit of a downside to that gorgeous art style, is that everything is in those sort of relaxing pastel hues. But as you say, the contrast can make it a little more challenging than it might be otherwise. But you know, it's all swings and roundabouts. I guess there are compromises that have to be made for artistic vision sometimes.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. But all in all, I'd say Alto's Adventure, it's a very worthy remaster, because at the time, clearly it was an essential mobile game because of how well it suits the platform. And it's remain so now in the year 2022 on Apple Arcade. So I don't think there's anything more I can add other than it was a classic then, it remains a classic now. So by all means, play it, have it on your phone. And I think it's a great game to have in rotation with some of the more sort of deeper games or perhaps more narrative focused games like Gibbon and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't have much more to add. I totally agree based on my experience. But I guess given that that's all that we have to say about Alto's Adventure, we might want to talk about what we're going to be playing over the next week or so while we're getting ready for the next episode, starting with me because I'm already talking. I'm looking to start playing Gear Club Stradal. I hope I'm saying that right. That's by Eden Games out of France, and their sub-headline for the game is Welcome to Italy, Birthplace of Supercars. I've been in a real car mood recently. I've gone through and finished everything in Gran Turismo 7. I've been getting things together to maintain my own car. I'm in a real car mood. So that's why I've chosen this game. Keen to get stuck in.
Fantastic. The surprise rev head in Steven comes out.
Yeah, it's been hiding for a little while.
And I will be playing Badland Party by Hype Hype Inc. And so this is also a classic mobile gaming franchise, the Badland series. So Badland Party is a new Badland game, but it also comes with online multiplayer, so you can play together with friends, family, or explore the atmospheric world by yourself. And I also see on the App Store listing that this includes local multiplayer as well. So I think this is probably one I'll check out on Apple TV at some point.
Sounds exciting. Everyone gather around the TV at Chris's place.
Sounds like a plan. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for joining us on this episode of the Mobile Arcade Club. And we look forward to having your continued listenership for the next one.
Catch you next time.